Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sam Legasek.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd. This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Oddcast, movies, music, and gaming. And here with me, as always, is Dreadful Dan G. Hello, Dan.
Hello. How are you?
Yes, very well. Thank you. Very well, very well. In one hand, Dan, I have a hit. And the other hand, I have a shit.
Oh, I know which hand I'd rather shake.
Can you tell which is which by the smell alone? And to make it a bit more difficult, I wipe my ass with the other hand that's not holding the shit to really throw you off the scent.
This is terrible. This is some like ancient riddle.
Yes.
Well, best way for me to tell would be to sample the audio delights contained within each hand.
Well, it's actually...
And that will help me determine which is the shitty one and which is the golden hit.
Well, it's actually a trick question, Dan, because... Full of ash. That's
Ooh.
Right. Today, today we're going to be talking about British posh rockers. Ash. I guess like before we go into our hits and shits for Ash, give me your thoughts on the band, general thoughts. Just hit me with what you think of Ash.
Not good. that was my unprepared response. As if I was seeing a shrink and you were just like, yeah, Ash, hit me. never got into them.
Yeah.
I remember liking, there are some songs I like. And actually, randomly, a few months ago over the summer, I was listening to Goldfinger, just popped into my head and I was like, I really want to listen to that song about 10 times in a row. I do remember, I think you liked 1977, the first album.
Correct.
But I never even listened to it, I think, all the way through.
Oh, really?
I've never listened to a Ash album.
What's
I just remember
never?
A smattering of singles. And some of them were okay and then some of them weren't so good. And I think I haven't really heard anything they've done for about 20 years. Although I know they're still going.
Mm.
So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Ash.
Okay. Yeah, I guess like, so Tim, what's his surname?
Wheeler.
Tim Wheeler, that's it. So I guess like, yeah, 1977, it was like post-Nirvana and all this stuff. Tim Wheeler was a big Nirvana fan. He met Kurt Cobain or something. Yeah, he's got like, he's got something signed by him or some of his clothes or something like that. And I remember in an interview he was saying, yeah, it was when he was wearing that like Freddy Krueger red and black like jumper thing that he had, that massive one. Because it was obviously so like striking and one of his like symbolic kind of outfits or whatever. Anyway, whatever. So Tim Wheeler was really influenced by Nirvana. And you can kind of see it on that 1977 record, but in a sense of it's got very, it's not dark or anything at all, pretty much, but it's very, very poppy, very rocky. And I genuinely really like that album just because it's got some really like hooky, poppy songs. And that was kind of like fine. So that was in, I think it was 97 that it got released. And at that time, no, is it 95?
I think it's a bit older than that.
95 maybe?
96.
96, close, in the middle. And yeah, and at the time it was like, they were just like these boys, whatever, you know, like, all like young looking, whatever. It's just like, okay, it's just some indie kids, whatever. And yeah, I really like that first album. It's weird because like the secret track or whatever is Someone Puking. I don't know if you've heard. And then like, and then they kind of went off on one a little bit. So that album, that first album, it's one of those albums where like it feels like every track off it was a single. Like they released everything like on that album as a single. And it's kind of fair enough because it's you know, it's pretty good. And then they did, so if I'm right in thinking this, yeah, so 96 was 77. Then in 98, which for us felt like an absolute lifetime because that was, they did Nuclear Sounds, which was starting to come, which is, they changed their logo, for instance, which had a bit more of a 60s kind of, I don't know, like that whole album covers like a bit 60s Britpop or whatever. It's definitely very early 90s.
And it looks really naff.
Yeah. And then within 2 years, they've gone like, late 90s, and it looks a bit more like, you know, like Hackers and Prodigy and and they're trying to like, it's all like bright neon yellow and like Nuclear Sounds, if you see what
that title is terrible.
Yeah, exactly, awful. And the first one, I always remember the first track from that album was Jesus Says, and it had Tim Wheeler wearing basically like a sleeveless vest. And even at that time, it was one of those things which like some people would wear, like when you see like Dom from Fast and Furious or whatever wearing it, and it's like, and he still wears that, and you're just like, it's not cool, like unless you're like, unless you've got like big muscly arms or whatever, and even then it's a bit uncool unless you do that. You just like, and there's Tim Wheeler, who's this very thin, very insipid looking gentleman wearing this like sleeveless vest thing, trying to be basically sexy, and it's like, you are not sexy. And I always remember that video for Jesus Says. If you remember, it goes like around and around, like it's turning the whole time, and it just makes you sick. Like watching, I remember at the time just going, it makes me feel ill. Like I just wanted to stop, but it's just like, hey, it's crazy. Keep going, like 4.5 minutes or whatever. Keep going. And so yeah, I dropped off as soon as I heard that track and I saw what they'd done. I was like, yeah, I'm not listening to this. And I never really got back into it. So yeah, they released Free Will Angels after that, which was a little bit better. It had like, yeah, Shining Light was like, oh God, whatever. But it's like, okay, this feels a bit more back to how it was a little bit. Burn Baby Burn, again, it's quite poppy, but I actually quite liked Burn Baby Burn. And that was a single.
It's got a good hook.
Something. And there were some other bits and pieces. I was like, it's all right. It's okay. And then, and then just after that, like, what was it? Intergalactic Sonic Sevens? What's that? That's just a single collection, isn't it?
Yeah, compilation.
Compilation. Meltdown, never listened to. Twilight the Innocents, never listened to. Now they've gone like, they're just so like about whatever's going on at that time, like in terms of their look and their logo and whatever. It's like, just do what you want to fucking do. Stop trying to like force yourself into something. And I've not listened to them since, basically.
They released an album in 2017, so they're very much still
still going.
Still gigging and recording music. But like you say, I think the longer it went on, the more you can see that they don't really have anything about them necessarily. Like it's nice sounding pop music that's then just sort of packaged and presented, you know, with whatever's kind of like going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought about like Tim Wheeler, like you say, the sort of drippy looking guy.
Yeah, pretty much. So,
yeah. But I always thought there isn't really anything about him in terms of like being an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Like he doesn't feel like he's got anything much to say.
No, I think he's actually, and it sounds bad, but like just posh boy, had a very nice upbringing. Like he's not like a troubled artist, had nothing to like worry about. I mean, I remember with, it was 98, yeah, when Nuclear Sounds, when they had like the woman or whatever, and they tried to like, you know, it's like, oh, they've got a sexy woman in it now. Look, they're all like a bit sexier and a bit more mature. It's like,
yeah,
whatever, like fucking hell. I always remember as well, so I met Tim Wheeler as well when I was doing a whole bunch of stuff for what was called the Fly Sessions, and I was recording bands and whatever. And Tim Wheeler came on, he did a Christmas album with his girlfriend at the time.
Okay.
And they did a performance. It's all like acoustic Christmas songs, whatever. And they performed a whole bunch of them. And I was like, oh, they're out of tune. Like, he can't really sing. And then after that, I remember listening back to it going like, yeah, these like songs are very easy. Maybe it's part of the appeal. I don't know. But he's not got like a great voice. It doesn't feel like there's anything particularly behind it. But some of the songs I do really like. And it's that thing of like 1977, it felt like it was like three young kids just like, yeah, we're going to make like a rock record and see what's. And they just did it. And it felt, and it's all like stupid stuff like about Jackie Chan and, you know, Girl from Mars or whatever. It's all like these kind of like, it's all a bit silly and that's fine back then. And when they start to take themselves like seriously, it's like, oh, fuck off.
It's a bit like, I mean, they hit the right nerve at the right time. And there were quite a lot of bands at that point, I think, that then fell into maybe the same hole that they did. You know, I think like Supergrass, who I really like.
Yeah.
But they struggled, I think, to redefine themselves, didn't they? And,
yeah,
and by the end of the 90s, it's kind of like, not sure how relevant you are.
No, In It for the Money was probably the last good thing. I don't know. There's been some stuff as well, actually. But
I like all of their stuff. Mm. It's just that they didn't seem to have a place anymore. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a bit like Ash and, yeah, plenty of other bands that kind of came through at this point.
Mm.
They kind of started as like coming off the wave of, you know, Nirvana or grunge or whatever you want to say. And then as that movement kind of progressed through more, you know, Brit rock, you know, after Brit pop, yeah, a lot of them started to like fall off and just feel a bit directionless.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what happened with these guys.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I saw them live at Reading once and it was just so boring. Just so, so boring. And I remember like, and this is going to, you know, how do I put it this way? It felt like the fan base was constantly like 12-year-old girls, as if like this was like an entry point to like rock or something.
Yeah.
It was like a really easy way to get into rock. Totally harmless band. Yeah, I don't know. Like nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Well, before we get too down on Ash, should we remind ourselves what you liked about them?
Yeah, why not? Let's start with a hit. Let's start with my hit. Which I think you'll like it. It's off 1977, not really a surprise there. It's actually the first track. So I guess it's the very first Ash track.
Okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And this is Lose Control. Enjoy. We'll be right back. did you think?
Yeah, I really liked it. Much closer to, obviously, a sort of sound that I like. But yeah, like with my Goldfinger, which is like my only reference point, I think, for the early stuff. It's got like a bit more of like a bit of dirt and grit in there, I think. And kind of reminded me a bit of Dinosaur Jr. Mm-hmm. I liked, there was a lot of like guitar squall towards the end, especially during that like solo.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'd listened to this, I don't know why I wasn't listening to any of this stuff. I'd have really loved this back in the day.
Yeah.
This is quite exciting.
I mean, it was seen as a pop record. Like, it's not as if people are going, oh, have you heard this like rock band or whatever? It's like, it was still like, this is pop. Like,
yeah.
And it's very much like, you know, people might think, oh, it's still, you know, it's not like pop. It's like pop these days wasn't pop back then. Like, this was poppy. It was a poppy album. But that first opening track I always really liked. And every time, whenever I go back to Ash 1977, especially if I haven't listened to it for a while, and that put it on, and that first track, I was like, fuck, I always forget. Like, and I think what also I really like about it is that is the verse as well, because it's got that, it's that typical just going up, and that build up thing was very much of that time. Like, when I think of like My Vitriol or whatever and bands like that, it's that was kind of like the norm. But then that little weird guitar bit, and it feels like the guitar's like slightly out of tune or something. It doesn't feel quite right, and he's singing along with it. And I just like the way it's got those like really poppy bits that kind of like, it feels like a hard rock almost, but then it's still got those, and it's got that kind of weirdness to it. So there's kind of, I always feel like with that song, there's like a lot happening. And again, as I was saying to you before, the fact that they don't take themselves seriously, the fact it starts with like a Star Wars.
I wondered what that was.
Star Wars TIE Fighter sound. Like straight in, it's just like, again, it's very much like, we're geeky, we're like pop culture, this is just the shit that we like, we're just some kids, this is the kind of stuff. There's like an innocence behind it, which is quite nice, basically, in its own way.
That was the zeitgeist at the time though as well, wasn't it? There's a little bit of like an Adam and Joe thing going on.
That's true, yeah, no, exactly. So there you go, there's my hit.
I'm surprised because, while I was listening to that, I flicked forward on their catalogue through Wikipedia. And they did work with the same producer. So I was thinking, this is kind of a different sound. And I was like, maybe they moved on, but no. Because definitely, I think it starts to sound a bit more smoothed out later down the line. I guess that must have just been a conscious decision.
Yeah, maybe. I think, everything was getting a bit more... That's the thing, is that they just went with the times and everything just got a bit more processed and produced and everything. You know, it wasn't in utero days anymore or whatever. Okay, cool. And Dan, do you want to introduce us to your hit?
Yeah, so I've gone with... I was going to put Goldfinger and I thought that's a bit boring. I've gone with a single that was released between 1977 and Nuclear Sounds, which is A Life Less Ordinary. And I believe this was the first song they recorded with Charlotte Hatherley in the band.
Yeah.
So, let's give it a listen.
Toss up between this and Lose Control.
Ah.
And the only reason Lose Control won is because I thought Dan's probably not heard this
Yeah.
That's a good decision.
But yeah, like A Life Less Ordinary for me, love it. Like it's a constant, it's consistently on like playlists that I've made.
Oh, really?
Especially like, I don't know, like running ones or just general pop, not pop, just general shit I want to listen to in the car, whatever. And it's always on there just because there's a lot of stuff going on. Like one, the music video was on constantly on MTV.
I can't remember it.
Do you not? It was them strapped to the top of minis and like just playing, and they're strapped to the top of these cars, but like with their knees like knelt down, if that makes sense. So they're kind of like as if they're in a rock star pose kind of thing.
Okay.
They're all playing and they've got like drum kit, bass and all that stuff. And the cars are doing like this synchronized stuff. So it looks fucking, that looks fucking cool because obviously they're just mouthing the words.
Yeah.
But it looked weird. It looked cool. And they've got like the wind rushing through them and all this stuff. So it's quite nice. Like, cause there's this like speed to it almost.
Yeah.
And she's, you've got the girl in it as well.
What did you think about Charlotte and her contribution to Ash?
Fine. Like she was there, like she can sing, which is nice. I quite like the kind of, cause he's got quite of like a girly kind of voice. It's quite a weak voice. I think I've said the same before.
Yeah.
Anyway. And her harmonies are actually quite nice, and it's nice to have that in the girl thing. And it really works for this song as well for many reasons. Because also remember, this was a track that was the title track for the film, which had Cameron Diaz and Ewan McGregor in.
Yeah.
It's called A Life Less Ordinary, which I want to say, was it Baz Luhrmann directed it?
No, I think it's Danny Boyle, isn't it?
Maybe it is Danny Boyle.
I've never seen it.
So it's one of those films that was like Cameron Diaz and both Ewan McGregor, to be honest, like they were kind of coming to like the height of their popularity. You're right. It was Danny Boyle. And it was like a very strange film. It was very stylized. It's very, very like, yeah, very, very 1997. Yeah, it's kind of trying to be a bit like True Romance, Pulp Fiction-y or whatever, but still a bit more like of a mainstream version. And it was just this weird love story, but it had a lot of like those Danny Boyle strange moments. Anyway, so it the music video had clips of that film as well.
Okay.
And it all just like fit together really nicely, if that makes sense. And yeah, it's just got a great chorus. It sounds super lovely, like super, super sweet. It's still a bit rocky.
Yeah,
and it's just a bit more like we were saying how Tim Wheeler doesn't feel like an artist or whatever. This feels like a bit more emotive
than
his other work.
I agree.
So I can see why you chose it. It's a good choice. But yeah, I'm interested in why you might have chosen it out of the Ash track that you chose, because it was a bit of a surprise. Because I was thinking, oh, one, I didn't think you knew this song. Two, I was surprised that you might like it. So,
just for the reasons that you said, I think it's actually, it hasn't got the grit, but it works here, that smooth sound, because like you say, it's quite sort of like lush, sweet song, but it's still quite exciting. It's well crafted, I think. The chorus is excellent, so catchy, and the harmony there is really nice. It's just one of those songs that I kind of always had in the back of my head. It's like, oh, that's a good song, but I don't think I've listened to it in 20 years.
Right.
So when I listened to it, I was like instantly hooked again, and I've like had it in my head the last few days as a constant kind of like earworm. But yeah, that's it really. I do remember seeing Charlotte once at a gig. And I do think she was checking me out. So I've always had a soft spot for the Charlotte years as well.
Probably thought you were going to attack her. Is that kind of checking out, you mean?
She was definitely, honestly, she was giving me a look. And no, this would have been,
leave me alone.
This is at the London Astoria. Right. Probably would have been like about 1999, I reckon.
Okay.
Probably seeing Idlewild.
Right. Yeah, okay.
And And I've always wondered what could have been. But I looked her up recently and I was like, she's not that good looking really. So
that's what you base it on.
I dodged the bullet really.
God.
Yeah.
Because
she's only a few years older than us.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's true. What's her surname? Charlotte
Hatherley.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I think she's actually gone on to do quite a lot of interesting stuff. She seems to have worked with Bat for Lashes.
Okay.
Done her own solo work. I think she left Ash because she'd recorded some solo stuff and then like spun out into a bit of a solo career.
Yeah, fair enough.
So she's been busy.
Talk about it. She's nice. It's fine. Eva alone. God, Jesus. She's just shaming away for the shop. So, and as well with that song, I'm just thinking about it, like, I really like that breakdown and then it kind of builds back up. And every time it goes into that breakdown, I'm always like, oh yeah, I forgot about this bit. And then when it goes back into the chorus, I'm like, oh, actually, I really like it because it's just kind of pulled me away from the hook. And it's just brought back the hook again. I'm like, oh yeah, the hook, that's great. Really love that. You took me away from it for a sec. And I was like, yeah. Now you brought it back and I love you all the more for it. I think it was good. But yeah, I do think like, the fact that, you know, take me in your arms again, all this stuff. And it's got those shots of Ewan McGregor and Cameron Diaz. And it did kind of remind me of the film and all this stuff. So weirdly, it's kind of like, I've kind of meshed it in my head with the film and like their kind of like love and all this. And it's kind of all like one big pile of emotion that's sitting in my back of my head as a pile of ash. but yeah, good choice. Good choice there.
The other thing as well that occurs to me, it's got a Blue Album sound to it, like a Weezer sound.
Yeah.
That I think, yeah, again, actually, you know, everything, I mean, that's probably appropriate to the whole 1977 album as well. Mm. There's that Blue Album sound that I don't think they had it on the next album, and it really suited them.
Yeah, it's so weird, like, why they went in that direction. Well, it's not weird, it's a record company choice, probably, I imagine, and I doubt they have fucking backbone to have argued the case for it. Okay, well, let's move on to the shitter side of things, Dan. Let's go into my hot steaming turd, which a lot of people like, but this is Candy.
Hard to get through. That was a so solid stall of a shit.
Yeah, it really was. It was a single. They released a proper single, did a music video and everything for it.
I was just looking, it reached number 20 in the UK singles chart. I didn't care for that. As soon as it hit, I was like, oh, that like string sample overprocessed, like that is such a 2000s kind of sound.
Mm.
That's a sample from the Walker Brothers, Make It Easy on Yourself. And they've just like, they've just overused it to the point of exhaustion.
Mm.
It's like every bar, you hear it again. Because without it, there's no song. Yeah. Like you can just tell they're just like total over reliance on that. So syrupy, this song. Candy, I mean, more like molasses. It's like wading through treacle, like the sound of it is just horrible.
Yeah.
And then what I thought was really telling was towards the end, in an attempt to try and like make this epic, they tack on this like random like bit of guitar soloing for an extra minute that just sounded so incongruous. Awful. And another bit that was awful, right in the middle, there's like a random truck driver's gear shift, which like suddenly, you know, goes up a key.
Yeah.
And poor Tim Wheeler's voice isn't strong enough to handle it. He comes back in and like singing a little bit higher and it's like so thin. I was like, oh, poor tiny Tim. You can do it.
Keep trying. Yeah, it's a bit like, God, it's just, I remember like when I first heard it, was when I first saw it, and I think it must have been on MTV2 or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, what are they doing? Like, what is this? And I think if I remember the music video, it's like in a hall and he's crooning or whatever, and he's wearing some shitty suit or whatever. And yeah, same thing. It's just like, I remember like hearing it, just thinking, God, it's like they've just sold their soul, basically. And it's also like very much, I don't know, like I was thinking, if they'd have taken it in a more ironic, tongue-in-cheek way, which yeah. I think they were maybe hinting at, I'm not quite sure, but they weren't leaning enough into it, if that's the case, then I might have had a bit more like, I don't know, like respect or something for it than I do, which is just like, this is just some sappy kind of, like, what is it? Like, what are they doing? This isn't an Ash song, is it? That's just weird. I just hate it. It's just wrong. And it's just one that it was, I think as well, like why I chose this was because I think I'd always kind of, I don't know, held out hope basically that there was still like something there that, that maybe they could do. And then when I saw this, it's like, I think they've gone. I think I have to let go.
This is only their third album.
See, I didn't listen to it much of that. That's what I'm saying.
This was on,
given up on them by that point already.
This was on Free All Angels 2001. Jesus. So look, there's a little
quote. Burn Baby Burn was good. I agree. That was released in terms of Candy. I'm not sure. But yeah. And the video for that was Burn Baby Burn was good as well. I think it was they were in a like
American gym
or something.
In a basketball court or something.
That's right, yeah. And there's, I can't remember if it's some cool camera effects or something's happening. I can't remember. I think Candy might have been released after Burn. But I think Burn Baby Burn was the...
That was the lead single, I remember.
First single, yeah, which makes sense.
There's a little quote here on Wikipedia. I just want to read you.
Okay.
Wheeler has said about the sample, it's on a song called Candy that we rewrote about four times because we couldn't get it right.
Right.
We tried some samples and that fitted perfectly. It lifted the song up and we danced around the studio for 2 days. So, yeah, sounds like they had trouble writing a song. And then they were like, we need to get something like a sample in here to make something of it. And they tried to fit anything they could think of. And then they were like, yeah, that string part works.
Oh, God. Let's just do it. Awful. That's such a shame. Well, Dan, let's listen to your turd to finish this off with.
I've really mined new territory to find this because, like I said, I just didn't know enough Ash.
Mm.
So I actually went on a hunt. I consulted the internet for like bad Ash songs.
Right.
And this was pretty near the top of the list of stuff that came out. So it's a bit of a later track from their album Meltdown in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
This is Starcrossed.
just like an angel sleeping. I wish I could.
Star-crossed, Sam. How did it make you feel?
Just tell me, like, in context of this album, what's happening with this album? Is this atypical of that album? Did you listen to any more of it? Or is this, why this song of it?
I just thought it was ridiculously sappy, showed no invention or no emotion, really. No spark of anything. Mm. I think this is the last album with Charlotte on it. But it's just so insipid, bloated. You know, attempt at like a big emotional, like epic ballad kind of thing. Mm. I think lyrically, he's trying to retell the story of Romeo and Juliet, like star-crossed lovers,
okay,
which is just putrid. And I listened to it, I just thought this is just like a big pile of puke, basically. Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I felt the same kind of thing. I thought I might have heard this before, so I don't know if this was a single.
It was.
Right, okay, yeah, that makes sense. So it is just nothing, basically. It's just, I've already forgotten it, to be honest. It's just so, like, white noise, almost. Yeah, as you said, totally insipid, totally just blur and meh and whatever. It's also very indicative of the kind of songs that were kind of going on at that time as well, like, especially when bands were trying to sound more mature.
Yes.
And they couldn't. And basically they're kind of, I don't know, like they're kind of grasping at straws with something like this.
Totally.
I guess it's like, yeah, I mean, that chorus is like slightly melodic, maybe. And that's giving it like faint praise. But yeah, it's just so nothing.
You're so right. And I kind of think the same about Idlewild, you know, when they were like, oh, we want to mature.
That's just never made.
Yeah, but it's like, by maturing, we're going to try and write, you know, Ash have done like a big power ballad. Idlewild would do these like big over-emotive songs with like strings on. But unfortunately, it just, you know, in both cases, they just exposed themselves because they weren't able to actually write anything. So it was all like,
yeah,
pomp and fluff, and there's nothing in there. It's just a big empty hollow marshmallow full of puke.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we should do an Idlewild one because you and me were really into them. I think they're one of the bands that I've seen live the most.
Maybe. Yeah, likewise.
And it's mad. So it's, I understand completely what you're saying. I think what made the Idlewild different from Ash, say, is that Idlewild were basically like art rock. Like they all came from like an art college. They were all very intelligent. Like Roddy Wimble he was like, everyone was calling him like the next Morrissey or whatever, because there was an element like poetry to his lyrics, the way he sang, his songwriting, the way he was expressing himself, blah, 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 blah. It felt very raw and personal,
whatever,
and all this stuff. Completely different from Tim Wheeler. But
yeah.
That's why, like, when Idlewild made that change, and what album was it? I can see the fucking cover. It's got like You Held the World in Your Arms and all that on it.
Whatever. Yeah.
And there's one track on it which is like, all right, maybe two. You Held the World in Your Arms was not that great, but there was one track on it which I thought, okay, this is quite cool. The rest of it, again, it's just like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Like, again, it's like, I don't know if it's a reaction to the label going like, you have to do something different, or you like, you have to be more mainstream or do whatever. But it's just like all that stuff, like, you know, you can tell Roddy Wimble as well. In fact, Roddy Wimble, whatever. I don't know. Like, I was in two minds about like, does he want to take it in this direction or not? Because when it felt like, I know he's done like loads of solo acoustic stuff and it's all a bit more, bit more personal, I guess, and all this stuff. He tends to do Idlewild stuff from like the first two, three albums, whatever.
Oh, really?
Then any of the other stuff. I might be wrong. So there's part of me thinking like, well, yeah, maybe he felt the same way. I don't know.
I remember at the time thinking that he was part of that change.
Okay.
Because I remember a quote from him saying something about maturing. And that was at the time Bob Fairfowl left the band. The bassist, he was quite popular, wasn't he? I think he didn't like the direction. So he was out.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, because the main songwriter is the guitarist guy. I forget his name.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember his name either.
Yeah. And some of that still came through. But yeah, just that overly, maybe it's kind of fair enough. Like the thing is, like, especially with Idlewild, it's like there comes to a point where they're these like scrappy kids doing scrappy music and we like that. And then maybe it's a case of just like, they're like, we can't do this forever. Like we're having kids or whatever and stuff and getting older. We can't pretend that we're like these like college rockers.
They should have pretended.
But I think that's it, right? Is that people mistake maturing. Basically, people have an image of their head, like what is like maturing as a musician. And that doesn't necessarily mean making music for your dad or something like that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you can still do stuff that's different. Like, okay, like it's a bit of a bullshit excuse, but like Nirvana, when you go from like Bleach to Nevermind to In Utero, each time it's matured, doesn't necessarily mean it's got like worse or that it's a dad rock or whatever now. They've matured in a sense of they've evolved. It's progressed. It's a progressive thing. It shouldn't be something that you've got in your head. You're like thinking, right, I have to use like a pop producer or something, because now we've got to hit the mainstream and now we're like, we're grown up now, we're in this properly. To go abide by the rules. And it's like, well, as soon as you've done that, you've lost, because then you're not interesting.
I feel like they replaced like the noisy stuff with like, we're gonna have more of like an acoustic-y, rounded, folky kind of sound with softer songwriting. It's like, ugh.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, that's Idlewild. Ash.
That's it. The Remote Part was the album where it kind of started falling away a little bit.
Yeah.
Third album.
I hated that.
A Modern Way of Letting Go. I was like, I quite like that.
Remote Part, I didn't even buy it. I was so horrified by You Held the World in Your Arms Tonight.
Yeah.
I just instantly, stone cold, killed me dead as a fan.
Yeah, well, American English is awful, but basically the first three tracks were the first three singles. God knows about the rest, but A Modern Way of Letting Go is the rocky one, which you might like.
Hmm.
It's basically the best song on that album. But that's not really saying much. And then, yeah, they did, if you remember, Warnings, Promises in 2005. I did buy that as well. Love Steals Us From Loneliness, which is the first song on it, is fine. Right, well, that's enough Idlewild, Dan. So Ash, what would you, any last words? What do you reckon?
Ash, more like ashtray, full of old fag ends and detritus and fecal residue.
Yes. As otherwise known as Tim Wheeler's brain. So thanks everyone for listening to this one, and another hit and a shit coming to you soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter Podcast Network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram at anewwinter, Twitter at anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening and see you again soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.